History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan.
On my mind.
A lot has happened in the last half hour. Certainly, you know, we're all thinking of the Bieniemy family.
Hell yeah.
Whatever happened there in Loudoun County. The Commanders also made a coaching move this morning, firing their tight ends coach, Ben Steele. And as they kind of get into a scramble mode for what you do there, I did have one thought, B.
Yeah.
Wes Welker worked with the tight ends during minicamp. He's got this nebulous offensive assistant title. They could try to slide him in there.
He was with defense last year.
There's probably 100 guys they could call to take over that job. There is one dude I thought of, though.
Ooh.
Does a lot of in-house media. Played the position. Played for Dan Quinn. Coaches Paulson? On the high school level.
Oh, Lowe?
Logan. I mean, Logan Paulson.
He would have to be wanting that, though.
Certainly, and that's a lifestyle change and a million different things, but it's just kind of interesting.
Logan is very much like you with the kids. I don't see him coaching. I think high school, yes, because he has a better schedule, but the way pro coaching is, nah.
Yeah, and I like when people call in and say, well, Beamish, why don't you coach special teams? Like, that's generally a simple idea that sounds cool but doesn't usually extrapolate, so maybe I shouldn't even be suggesting it because I'm sure on social media it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing, but I don't know. He is a intuitive football mind that knows Dan Quinn very well, played for Dan Quinn. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there's a little more to it to me. Yeah. So, all that said, the biggest story walking in this morning was, we got to get ready for training camp. But the Nats made a big move. And we've been kind of waiting to see which way they go. And what's interesting is this one is kind of both in a lot of ways. They both kind of bought and sold on this one.
That's what a lot of the talk was Thursday and Friday. So when you were golfing.
Most important, don't forget to drink a beer part. Most important.
Try to not say that.
The Nats take 2 out of 3 against the Diamondbacks this weekend. So they win another series. Briefly, may I, Brian? I was in. Friday night, I was home. I watched that game at home. That's when I was blowing up the text thread because I was unhappy with some at-bats, right?
Yeah.
Saturday morning, I drive to Ocean City, Maryland. And I hope I don't get in trouble with the cluster buster for this. 106.7 in Ocean City, Maryland is a Spanish station. So that, I'm not going to hear the Nats there.
Mm-hmm.
So then I fired up the Odyssey app. And it tells me I'm regionally blocked. How am I regionally blocked in Ocean City? And I don't think that's our decision. And for all the 8 zillion people that replied to me on Twitter, use the Odyssey app, dummy. Don't you work for them? I tried it. It was blocked. I just wanted to hear Danny on the call.
Mm-hmm.
And I was driving around a little bit. I had to go to the grocery store. I had to pick up tacos for my wife. I was driving around. And luckily, one nice person actually gave me a solution and said, you can listen via Sirius XM. So I did that. I thought Danny sounded great. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really fun to listen to. I thought he was the right mix of like baseball insight and humor, and the timing sounded good. I think the timing with baseball can be the most tricky thing. But my mother-in-law down there has YouTube TV, so I can't watch the Nats. Somehow, I can't even listen to him. I felt like I was in the Stone Ages. I was checking my phone for updates. Drove me nuts. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, we need a salesperson to make a deal with an Ocean City station for an official broadcaster down there. I don't know how that gets done, but I'm an idea guy.
What do they catch more down there? What sports do they catch more, Philly or here?
I think it's probably Orioles.
Oh, that's like Baltimore. Yes,
the Delaware beaches are probably more Philly. I think OCMD is Ballmer, hun.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Nats take 2 out of 3. Bats continue red hot. And then we get the first trade, right? Curtis Meade, who I have really liked watching Curtis Meade. I've got to talk to him a few different times. A dude that just hits bombs and has a cool Australian accent, always going to be a fan favorite. Like, that's just kind of how that's going to go. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And now they traded 4 Curtis Meade this offseason for a prospect that is hitting really well, but it's at low A or high A. You probably can't take too much from that, right? And then they're able to trade Curtis Mead to the Red Sox for a true stud pitching prospect in this lefty, Connelly Early. I was listening to Part of My Take this morning, and they were saying his name's kind of annoying. Wouldn't Connor Early be a better name than Connelly Early?
Who?
The kid's name is Connelly Early. The pitcher they got.
His name is what his parents named him, dog.
Sure. Now, here's the issue. For the good news with Early is he's under control for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Under control till 30 or 31, right, Stallion? Like, this is a young fireball left-hander that is budget-friendly and supposed to be a stud. Paul Toboni apparently loves this dude.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Toboni talked about him in his introductory press conference. So he's able to get something that could have a ton of value down the line. But Mead was hitting homers now.
Yeah.
Connelly Early is expected to make his first rehab start in the minors on August 3rd. Mm-hmm. So, like, this dude's still on the IL. So this, for the people that want them to help this team right now, maybe that's a late August he's pitching again, mm-hmm. I would guess. But this is a long-term play, not a short-term play.
It's a long-term play. He may be able to help them late August, but like you just stated, 5 years of control. And the more I get deeper into baseball, that's all they care about, control. They want to be able to have you as long as they possibly can. And if they can get you while you're balling out, it works out for them.
Does this make you think, to me, it's hard to think they're not going to trade at least Foster Griffin. Like, if you just acquired a guy that's supposed to be a stud, I mean, we're talking ace stuff, right, Stallion? I mean, this is a top-of-line rotation guy.
Yeah, I think probably like a number three, probably ideally down the road. But, I mean, he's a really good pitcher. And on this team, probably your number two, number three guy.
But what if they're thinking this? He's going to be coming along. We possibly keep Foster around. We know he could be a good one. Bring somebody else in. By the time you start hitting like a playoff push, or everything's working for you.
Stan, you explained this to me, how this is buying and selling at the same time. Because to me, it's selling, which I'm cool with.
I mean,
well, this doesn't help you right now in the wild card chase.
Well, I mean, it helps you in a few weeks from now when Connelly Early is expected to be back.
We think,
and I mean, he's scheduled to make a rehab appearance here relatively soon in the next week. I think Connelly Early helps his team like now. Like, he's going to be in the rotation probably August 25th, just as a guess here. Like, he's going to be here pretty soon, within a month. And this is someone who's already pretty established. He's pitched in a postseason game before against New York Yankees in the wild card round and looked okay for the most part against them. But this is someone that you're getting rid of Curtis Mead, who you already have the best power team in baseball right now, bar none. And Curtis Mead has helped with that, but also it's because of James Wood and C.J. Abrams. So you're adding a strength now with a left-handed pitcher. And you need it with pitching. That's our biggest need. And so you get someone that can help you this season, and you're offloading one of your right-handed power bats. That's going to suck, but still, I think that this helps his team win right now.
Assuming the elbow's good and he comes back, which I would say is kind of an assumption. But you can make that argument that this is buying and selling if you don't trade away Foster Griffin. Because if you acquired this kid and all of a sudden you boosted your rotation,
mm-hmm.
hell yeah. Like, if late August he's starting and then all of a sudden the rotation is that much better and you're bumping out one of these dudes at the bottom that hasn't given you much, totally. But if you make this move and trade Griffin, you're selling.
Somewhat.
Like, he helps now, assuming
he stays.
Griffin stays.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. If you let Griffin go, then you didn't really strengthen it. You kept it the same, or you may have dropped off. Unless you think this kid is better than Griffin.
I think the prospect type, I mean, Griffin's about to be 31, mm-hmm. was pitching in Japan the last couple of years.
Late
this kid
starter.
Is a stud prospect.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the long-term health of the organization, this is a great move. Absolutely. I just think right now, if you're going to move Griffin, you're selling. And I've been advocating for that. It's tough to say that now that they just took 2 out of 3 against the D-backs. They're a game out of the last wild card spot. Like, I just, this is one of the most interesting, tricky situations I've ever seen this Nats team, because we had Nats get to town and they're largely bad. Then they really start spending money. They really hit the lottery with a couple draft picks, and all of a sudden they're good for a while. Mm-hmm. And then they've just been bad again. Like, there hasn't been a lot of, oh my gosh, should they buy or sell? Yep. Now, there was the, oh my God, are they actually going to trade away Juan Soto kind of conversation. But it all, to me, circles back to cash. We'll open the phones, 800-636-1067. Spencer is in D.C. Spencer, what do you think of the Meade trade?
Guys, I think you're being a bit short-sighted here. We got Curtis Meade from the White Sox for essentially nothing. We gave up Boston Smith. Dude is playing Double-A right now in Chicago. We're bottom four in ERA early. I know he's on the IL right now, but he's going to come back soon. So I think Toboni deserves a lot more credit. Brady
I
House,
like the
he's
trade,
back
dude.
Up on the team.
I like the trade. I don't know that I buy they're buying and selling. If they don't trade Griffin, then I'm with you. But if you trade away Griffin and this dude's coming back late August, like, have you helped your rotation, or is that kind of even out, at least for this year?
Well, I agree with you completely. If we give up Griffin, then, I mean, it was a useless trade. So, you know, you have to do other trades to continue to build momentum and show that we're truly buying.
I appreciate the call, Spence. Yep. I wouldn't call it useless. Like, Toboni's job is to build a real championship contender over time. Mm-hmm. And if he thinks he can get early right now at this price point and he helps them in 28 and 29 and beyond, if they're going to trade Griffin, then we can't say we're building now also, because you need both of them if you're trying to make the postseason. Like, you're trying to add your starting pitching depth. I love it, but you got to be in for this year. And to me, it all circles back to cash. People are like, let's get an extension done for Foster Griffin. If you're Foster Griffin and this is your last crack at probably a massive contract, I think I'm going to free agency, dog.
But unless they come to you with something lucrative, sure. Right now.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Celebrating 30 years of the Junks, brought to you by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Main Street Bank is a business-focused community bank proudly serving the DMV since 2004. Visit mstreetbank.com to learn how to put their team in your office. Main Street Bank member FDIC, equal housing opportunity lender. So there's a lot happening with the Washington Nationals right now. There's a lot to get caught up on.
There's a reason to watch them, I'll tell you that.
Certainly. So let's just rewind quickly to Saturday. The Nats beat the Diamondbacks 5-3. And just a quick tip of the hat to Danny Ruye, who had the call along with Charlie Slows on the radio on Saturday. I didn't listen to the whole game, but I heard part of the game while I was driving around in the car. And Danny sounded great. Charlie sounded great as always. Danny sounded awesome sitting in Dave's usual seat. Dave had the day off. And I know it was a thrill for Funny Danny to get that opportunity.
Yeah,
awesome.
He's a natural.
He fit right in.
He's a natural.
Yeah, he sounded great.
I think I tuned
sounded
in
amazing.
Around like the 6th to 7th inning, and then when I was driving around, yeah, it fit right in.
Yep.
Very
so
comfortable.
He got to watch another gem from Foster Griffin, who improves to 12-2, now has a 2.76 ERA for the Washington Nationals, and now the trade rumors are really swirling around him, because we saw that the extension talks between his representatives and the Nats, the quote was, fizzled quickly.
Quickly.
Right.
Fizzled quickly. So
that
that's
tells
not
me.
Encouraging for him staying around.
There's
despite
two words, Cakes. He gone.
He gone.
He gone.
It's just, I would think it's just a matter of time until
you
hear the news.
Kinda
that
sucks,
Foster Griffin is on his way out of Washington,
well,
D.C.
Well, I mean, unless they come to an agreement over the next couple weeks.
They're not.
Well, next couple days.
Fizzled quickly.
It's hard to have encouragement when
fizzled quickly
is the description.
It's over, Johnny.
The negotiation.
It doesn't sound great.
He's gone.
It doesn't sound great.
He's gone.
But that's another reason why they made the trade for a starter, Connelly Early, because when Early gets back, now he's got inflammation of the elbow, but he's going to have his rehab assignment start on August 3rd. If they do trade Foster, then he'll take his place in the rotation.
Yeah.
And this team is, this was a huge series against the D-backs. It was huge. And
yeah, teams battling for wild card spots.
Yep, and they put up 15 runs in the last two games over the weekend, especially yesterday. They pounded the ball. CJ and James, like you heard in the highlights, had four combined home runs. It's just ridiculous. I don't know how Nats fans feel about trading a guy like Meade, who's having a really good year, 17 bombs. But it's not like they had a hole at third base. They called up Brady House right after they traded him.
Right. And I think really made it a lot easier.
Yeah, and he filled in yesterday, had a couple hits. Hopefully he'll be better defensively, and he can stay right there at third. And they acquire a young pitcher who they're going to have control over for the next 5 years.
Into 2031.
Yep, he's 24 years old. And if you looked at Early's numbers, and he won a spot in the rotation because of what he did in the spring training for Boston, but in his first, 10 starts this year, he gave up a total of 20 earned runs in about 60 innings.
Mm-hmm.
He had an ERA heading into the month of June of under 3.
No, it makes sense.
Under 3.
Especially if Foster Griffin isn't part of your long-term plans.
Yeah.
And he's been so good this year that I'm sure his reps are like, well, we're going to test the market.
Yep.
We're not just going to take a deal from the Nats. We love the opportunity you gave us, but it seems like he's going to test the market.
And
if he's not willing to sign with the Nats with whatever offer and proposal Toboney and company offered him.
Yeah, and if you believe all the reports, a bunch of teams are interested in C.J. Abrams, especially the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
The Brewers are also interested in C.J. Abrams. I'm just hoping that Paul does not trade C.J.
What if they get an incredible haul, though?
I don't know what an incredible haul is. They're going to be prospects.
They'd have to be almost.
Paul Toboney would want the top two prospects from either of those teams.
Yeah. But what if they get something like that and a veteran?
I'm guessing that they're not going to be better than C.J. Abrams.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But if you're going to lose them anyway in a couple years.
I don't care about a couple years. I mean, they got a shot of winning a wild card this year. That's what I want to see.
All right, 800-636-1067 is the number. Nats fans, you're welcome to call in. What are your views on the Meade to Boston deal and Griffin possibly being dealt after spurning whatever offer was given to him by the Washington Nationals as far as signing an extension here in Washington? 800-636-1067 is the number.
You almost consider it like, I mean, definitely, I saw most of the people that were grading the trade seemed to give, they said it was a trade that could help both sides, obviously. Boston needs some help with bats. Meade can do that. We obviously need pitching help. But especially given, as Jason mentioned, we have Brady House. You plug him right in. The guy's been doing very well in AAA. Everybody knows he's a big leaguer. That it almost is like you got Early for nothing.
A headline from Athlon Sports says, rival calls Connelly Early, Curtis Meade trade, quote, massive overpay by Red Sox.
Could be.
Which sounds like a huge win for the
Especially
Nationals.
Especially when you consider House being in there to plug and play for Meade. May not have the power, at least he hasn't demonstrated it yet,
right,
that Meade demonstrated. But Meade kind of showed power that I don't think people necessarily thought
he
had. No
one expected that from Meade. Yeah. No one knew who Meade was.
And then if they unload Griffin, which I know Nats fans and myself certainly would love to see Griffin stick around. The guy's been such a revelation, such a great story. But if they unload him and they get some prospects in return, it'll be a pretty good haul, because you could almost consider earlier replacement for Griffin.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Right? Yep. So you consider that a replacement for Griffin. You consider House a replacement for Meade. So that's kind of a wash. And then whatever you get in for Griffin is just added haul.
Well, Early's a potentially big upgrade because he's 6 years younger.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally.
Like Foster Griffin's 30, Early's 24.
Yeah, and you have control over him for the next 4 or 5 years
right,
or whatever.
Right, and the last time Early pitched was against the Nats. Mm-hmm. It was an 8-1 loss, but he didn't give up any runs. He pitched 4 innings, only allowed 3 hits, no runs. Then his elbow started bothering him, so he hasn't pitched in about a month because that was on June 30th. But again, you'll see him. I think you're going to see Early in the next, probably within the next 2 weeks.
So 800-636-1067. Do you approve of the trade? And then what do you think of the reports that the Foster Griffin talks kind of fizzled quickly? Does that also lead you to believe he gone? And they're going to unload on their real ace this year?
I mean, it just tells me that Griffin's reps walked in with a huge number and Toboni looked at it and said, this is not going to work for us as it's currently constructed.
I mean, who knows? Or they kind of lowballed him too, you know?
Yeah.
I would guess the Nats probably lowballed him.
They probably did.
I'm sure.
They probably did.
And then Griffin's reps had a big number and they can't meet in the middle.
Yeah, that's how things fizzle.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see here. Let's go to Ryan in Percival. Ryan, what's up, buddy? You're on with the Junkies.
Good morning, fellas. How you guys doing?
Hey, Ryan,
today?
What's up?
What's up, Ryan?
Hey, guys. I think imagine how good this team would be, the Nationals would be, if we had decent pitching. I mean, not even good pitching, just decent pitching and a decent bullpen. I think picking up Early is a fantastic trade for us. I mean, we don't lose anything by losing me, in my opinion. And I think we got some much-needed pitching. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
I think he's right. I mean, just as long as the elbow is healing on time, because if you do lose Griffin, you got to replace him with somebody. If they didn't trade Griffin and you had Early, Cavalli, and Griffin as your top three, mm-hmm. maybe not in that order, but Griffin, Cavalli, Early as your top three starters, and you went out and got a couple pieces in the bullpen, man, that's the last 40 games could be interesting.
I mean, you are losing a big bat in Meade, but they got plenty of bats. They have so much offensive firepower. Like,
they got plenty of bats.
They can afford to deal him away. So it makes sense.
You know who's heating up? Dylan Cruz. Dylan
nice.
Cruz is heating up.
That's great. It's great to see.
He's hitting the ball.
To Clary. Clary does Locked On Nats. And Clary is floating potential trade of Dylan Cruz.
Oh, really?
And I just don't think that's going to happen this early. I think it would be too soon.
Hey, do you think Paul Toboni is secretly mad
that
this season is going so well?
Like, it's not
going according to plan, right? The plan, everything's been accelerated so much, and it's not what he had in mind, and now he has to try and thread this needle.
Yeah, put him in a bind
of the team being good and then doing this rebuild.
I mean, they love it because it makes them look good.
Yeah, of course.
But it puts them in a bind. And when he said, we had him on the show last week. Obviously, we have him every week. And he said there could be a situation where we buy and sell, mm-hmm. and we still help the team. My brain was having a hard time figuring that out, but I think this was a good example of it.
Yeah, by acquiring a young arm for an expendable bat. He's not looking just for this season. He's looking down the road. He's looking two, three,
this season,
five.
But it does make gravy.
It does make him look good of who they brought in, that entire staff.
Totally.
The fact that they're killing the ball, leading all these stats.
I mean, they have very similar lineup as last year.
Guys having career years, especially homer wise and power wise.
Yep.
Jacob Young, Meade.
Well, it also creates a different timeline now. You're ahead of schedule.
Yes.
In this whole rebuilding process.
My
guess is he thought, okay, we'll be competitive 3, 4, 5 years instead, and now you're competitive already. So now next year is basically go time.
Hey y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together we host the podcast Reality Gaze. We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
We'll be right back.
Now the pitch on the way, swung on, driven in the air to right center field. Back goes Tawo again, looking up, going, 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 goodbye! Another home run for C.J. Abrams. Bang, zoom, he does it again, number 27. He's driven in three in the game. And he's given the Nationals the lead with four runs home here at the bottom of the fifth inning. It's now the Nationals 6, the Diamondbacks 4. Unbelievable.
Charlie Slows on the radio call yesterday on our sister station, 106.7 The Fan. C.J. Abrams is on a run right now that should legitimately put him into the MVP conversation. Now, he's not going to win the MVP because Shohei Ohtani is in the National League and a couple of others. But he and James Wood are certainly odds-wise right now in the top eight in the National League. How about this for C.J. Abrams, Max? Over his last 39 at-bats, which covers 10 games, 19 hits in his last 39 at-bats, 7 home runs in his last 39 at-bats, and 15 RBIs in his last 39 bats at-bats. He's hitting nearly 500. He's hitting nearly 400 for the month of July. The Nats beat the Diamondbacks 10-7. Held on, actually, for dear life in the ninth inning as the bullpen got a bit shaky in the ninth. But they took 2 of 3 from Arizona for their third straight series win coming out of the All-Star break. They are currently one game out of the National League's third and final wild card spot. Good morning, everybody. Hope your weekend went well. Training camp welcomes veterans to Ashburn tomorrow. First practice Wednesday this week. There will be plenty to decipher and pick through as Adam Peters and Dan Quinn, and I'm sure Jaden Daniels are expected to speak this week as training camp gets underway. A little bit of news over the weekend. Ben will jump on with us at 12, and we'll talk about that. A little bit of news this morning, coaching staff related. Ben will share that with us at 12. Think about an answer to the following question. The following question is, Washington's 2026 season will be defined as successful if, I need an answer to that, fill in the blank. Washington's 2026 season will be defined as successful if, I'll give you my answer, thought a lot about it. Max will give you his. We'll get to that coming up. Washington's 2026 season will be defined as successful if, some of you will say, if they go to the Super Bowl. I don't know if that's realistic, but it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility. So the Nats took 2 of 3 from Arizona, the team that was red hot coming in. The Diamondbacks had won 9 of 11 coming into this series in Washington over the weekend. They took the game Friday night 3-2. And then the Nats rallied on Saturday for a 5-3 win and then rallied yesterday to win 10-7 with C.J. Abrams and James Wood going nuts yesterday, both with 2 home runs in the game. James Wood now with 30 homers on the season, 72 RBIs, and C.J. Abrams, again, just on an insane tear. He's up to 27 home runs, and he leads the major leagues in RBIs with 82 on the season. He's approaching 300 now, hitting .297, but literally his batting average to start the month was at .273. He's now at .297, hitting .397 during the month of July. The Nats climbed closer to that wild card spot. They did make a trade over the weekend. They sent Curtis Meade to Boston for a left-handed starter in Connerly Early, who's actually hurt right now, inflammation in his elbow. But the baseball people seem to really like the trade for the Nationals. The Nationals have so much offense, so the idea is even though Meade was having a career year, they're going to be okay offensively without him. And they just added a legitimate starter to the rotation for later in the season when he is expected to be back. So we will see. Connor Early is just 24 years old and added to a rotation with Foster Griffin, fingers crossed, he's still on the roster when we get to the latter portion of the season. And Cade Cavalli could make for, along with that offense, a dangerous postseason team. It's not nuts. By the way, Foster Griffin pitched on Saturday, pitched well, but his 8-game streak of allowing just one earned run or less came to an end. He gave up 3 earned runs on Saturday, but still went 6 2/3, went in deep into the 7th, allowed just those 3 earned runs on 6 hits. So a solid outing for Foster Griffin on Saturday, and he got the win. He's now 12-2 on the season, but a lot of talk about Foster Griffin and whether or not he will be dealt by the time we get to early next week and the trade deadline, which is August 3rd, exactly a week from today. We'll see what the Nats do. I think this is a big week coming up. You know, if they continue to play really good baseball, they've got Toronto here for the next 3 at home starting tonight. Toronto's not played well recently. They've dropped something like 8 out of their last 11. They're in last place in the American League East. This will offer up an opportunity for Cade Cavalli to start one of these games. You got to come away with 2 of 3 against Toronto to win a 4th straight series out of the All-Star break. It would be great to get a sweep, obviously, but then a big stretch of 4 on the road in Atlanta, which will actually end the day before the trade deadline, and then they start a 4-game set in Philadelphia after that. So keeping the momentum, keeping a couple of games above 500, no worse than 2-3 games out of that wild card race, hopefully will keep the powers that be from becoming major sellers. Any sort of tailspin over the next week where they drop to 5-6 games out of the wild card spot and under 500 could be influential. I don't see that happening, but this is no longer, by the way, clearly no longer aberration. They've played 106 games. There are only 56 left, and the Nats are the highest scoring team in baseball, and they've gotten solid starting pitching as well. The bullpen's been the major issue this year. The bullpen actually did a nice job on Saturday. Yesterday got a little bit close in the ninth. The Diamondbacks went into the ninth inning trailing by 5 runs, 10-5, and they had 2 batters up, 1 swing away from taking the lead when the Nats walked the first 3 batters in the top of the ninth. But wow, what a season this has been, and it would be great if it continues. I got this from P. Jones 19. P. Jones 19 listens to the radio show and the podcast because he wrote, "Kevin, you and Tom," as in Lavero, "talking Nats all of a sudden after nothing for most of the season is laugh out loud. You made your bed with Brandon Ayuk, now lie in it." So I don't know if he's kidding or not. If he's not kidding, it's kind of a ridiculous position to take. You know, I let me just mention this. I would prefer to talk about baseball during the spring, summer, and into the fall a lot more than is done. But when your team for 5 consecutive years averages 96 plus losses a season and has among the worst sort of response from fans in the market, attendance wise and every other metric that would measure fan response, it's not an easy ask to do it all the time. We do it, and I like to do it. I like to have Mark Zuckerman on the show. I like to have Jesse Dougherty on the show. I like to have Grant Paulson on the show to talk baseball, Galdi on the show to talk baseball. I've got a Hall of Fame voter in Tommy Lavero on my podcast twice a week, and we talk baseball. But when you're averaging, you know, P. Jones 19, no offense, 96 plus losses a year, and you're literally in a position where you're not just bad, you are one of, if not the worst teams in baseball. It's tough, especially in a sports town that has one dominant team. And his note to me just reminded me of kind of, you know, I think we all understand this, and we're not unique. We're not unique. You know, there are a couple of incredible sports cities like New York and Philly, and certainly Boston and Chicago, you know, and Detroit to a certain degree. LA is an interesting sports town, but still the Lakers are the dominant team there, but they have a big fan base for the Dodgers as well. But we are a one team dominant sports town. There's just no debating that. And anybody that wants to debate you on that doesn't understand what the measurement of that would look like. I mean, there is mass appeal for our football team. There is bandwagon appeal for everything else. It's just the way our sports town has evolved. I think you could make the case that it hasn't always been that way, but it has to a certain degree. Look, the Capitals have a very passionate fan base, but it's not mass appeal like the football team. I think the Wizards could end up having something other than a bandwagon fan base if they actually became a contending team for the first time in a half century. But it's been a half century. Our baseball team has right now the third worst attendance numbers in the National League, even with a very unexpected, healthy, surprising season. It's the eighth worst in all of baseball attendance-wise. And, you know, it's not – but if they are in contention and there's all of a sudden playoff games in October, people will jump on that bandwagon. It's really what we've become. You know, the two college basketball teams in town, Maryland basketball has had in the past a very consistent, passionate fan base, but even that has waned in recent years and is more bandwagony. Georgetown certainly is that. Maryland football, I don't even know what you would call that. There's literally, legitimately no current, you know, palpable, measurable fan base that exists for the football program. Now, in the past, when Maryland's had good teams, and you got to go back a long way, even though Mike Loxley did a really nice job with three straight bowl teams, but these weren't teams that were contending for anything. They weren't, you know, necessarily ranked high or consistently. I've seen the bandwagon jump on for that. Would it do it now in 2026 like it did it in the 2000s with some of Ralph Regan's teams? I don't know. Bandwagony at best for them. But anyway, P. Jones 19, appreciate the fact that you appreciate that we are talking some baseball, and I'm into it. I like baseball a lot. I love it this time of year going into the postseason. And this season, you know, for a while, like you go back to, you know, one point in the first half of the season when they first started to sort of approach 500 and we were 50 or 60 games in, and then all of a sudden they were like four or five games above 500. And then they had some real devastating, you know, defeats, you know, that Philly series, the San Francisco series where they were giving up, you know, late leads. There were certainly some of those moments, but this team is sitting here 106 games into the season at 54-52 and a game behind the team they just took two of three from. They win the season series. So if we end up getting into any sort of tiebreakers late in the year, they own the tiebreaker over Arizona now with the season series win. But at 54-52, 106 games into the season with the offense they have, I don't think they're going away. The only way they go away is if they trade away, you know, all of these important parts. I don't think that's going to happen, but it'll be a very interesting week this week. Toronto tonight, and then for the next 2 days before a big eight-game stretch against the two top teams in the division. By the way, I keep talking about the wild card race with them just a game behind Arizona for the third wild card race. They're only three games behind Philly for the second wild card spot. And right now, most of the other teams are behind them. They and Pittsburgh are sitting a game out. This is going to be a really interesting race. The Nats just don't have many nights where they're not hitting. I mean, 15 more hits last night, 10 more runs. They had a game last week against Oakland, against the A's in Sacramento, where they only ended up with a run in the game on four hits. That is such an aberration these days. I mean, they are, you know, they have a very, very difficult lineup for opposing pitchers to face.
There's a lot going on in DC sports. Commanders training camp kicks off tomorrow. First official legitimate practice on Wednesday morning. We will be on site. And the Nationals just took a series from the team they're chasing in the wild card hunt. The Arizona Diamondbacks leave town. The Nats now one game back in the wild card. Toby, it's a good time to be a DC sports fan.
Yeah, it's a great time. It was a fun time at the ballpark this weekend, watching some good baseball for the Nationals, taking two of three after they dropped the opener. Danny Ruye was on the call. We maybe have to find some of those highlights and play and, you know, rate what he did in the broadcast booth. And I think the question, Grant, is the updated leaderboard is now 10 postgame interviews for you. I got lucky to have two this weekend, so I'm up to nine. Danny only has three, and it was a tough weekend for him in that he got the win in terms of he was in the broadcast booth, so we got to figure out how much that counts for. But two-thirds of his interviews have been Curtis Meade. And so who's he going to talk to after Nats wins now if he's a postgame guy?
I do want to talk about Curtis Meade and the significant trade that the Nats pulled off in just a second. But I think that's secondary for the moment, because the bigger picture right now is the postseason push.
Yeah.
That they're within a game in the wild card after taking two of three in what was their biggest series of the year. And they lost the opener of this series 3-2. They get a two-run homer from Dylan Cruz and don't score otherwise. And it was a really tough, disappointing game where they used an opener. This was a series, by the way, where their two worst starting pitchers went against a team that's better than you in the standings. And you still win the series. And you need to win the second and the third game. But C.J. Abrams continues to carry them. He will be named the player of the week in the National League whenever those awards are named today for last week. He was unbelievable with seven home runs over seven games and played like an MVP in the biggest games of his career. James Wood yesterday hit not one, but two home runs in the biggest game of his season. So to see those young stars stepping up, combining for four home runs in a rubber match to pull to within a game of the Diamondbacks was awesome. Foster Griffin, whose name's being bantied about in trade rumors, was dynamite in his start. Didn't have his usual prolific stuff and had to throw nearly 60 pitches over the first two innings, but I thought Foster Griffin settled in, put it on autopilot, was outstanding. Michaelis was just okay. Littell was solid after Palmquist struggled, but the bullpen actually pitched pretty well in this series, and certainly over the final couple of games, Matt Crook notwithstanding. And that's to be expected when he pitches, because he just hasn't had a whole lot of success here, and he's come and gone. And for whatever reason, they can't quit him, and they keep bringing him back. Because they have a quota where they need like six lefties that don't help him very much at any given moment. But it's just amazing what they've been able to pull off. And now you got the Toronto Blue Jays coming to town tonight. Three-game series at Nats Park. And wouldn't you know it, Max Scherzer is on the hill for the Blue Jays to kick off what is now the new biggest series of the year for the Nationals, as they all are, ahead of the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely incredible watching this team, and the thing that stuck out to me all season long has been resiliency and what this team is able to do after every time there's a little bit of a heartbreak. They bounce right back. I mean, we've had numerous times this season where you've gone, all right, let's keep an eye on them, see how they bounce back. You go back to the Marlins series a couple of weeks ago, and they get swept by the Marlins, and they have to go to a West Coast road trip, and you're like, how do they bounce back? They bounce back by winning both of those series. They end that road trip, by the way, by blowing a 9-1 lead in the eighth inning. So you're like, all right, how do they bounce back? Right back on the horse. They lose three devastating games in a row to the Phillies. Bounce right back. They lose three against the Yankees before the All-Star break, and all of us are like, well, nah, you probably got to sell. They bounce right back by winning three straight series out of the break.
How many times have we asked the question, less recently, but early on, how formidable are they? How legitimate is this? How good is this offense that's number one in scoring and home runs and runs and all these other things. I mean, it felt like a bi-weekly constant question. Well, when you respond as often as they have and you show that ability to get off the mat and keep on coming and to get kicked, right, and to be exposed, which they have been. Their flaws have been cut open. Middle relief, late inning relief, anything really involving the pitching staff.
Anything around that circle in the middle of the mound, right. It'll fail right there, yeah. That pitcher's mound.
But they just keep responding, and that means you're pretty damn good. And it's funny, you know, people wonder about this offense and how are they doing it? How is it possible? How have they become the number one team in baseball in runs or home runs? They have two of the top five guys in OPS right now, in James Wood and C.J. Abrams. C.J. Abrams, after this recent heater where he's been the best player in the sport post-All-Star break, road trip, dominant, comes back home, continues to dominate, 27 home runs. He's basically hitting .300 right now.
Yeah,
he's hitting .297. Remember, this is not the era where .275 is league average. It's going to be sub .250 at the end of the year, the league average batting average. So he's basically 50 points above league average while hitting for tons of power. He's on pace to hit 40 home runs. And he's got a .940 ops, which is only 10 points below team leader and MVP candidate James Wood right now. So he has connected the dots, man. He has put it all together. This was always the best case scenario for him. I think he's exceeded everybody's expectations. But he was drafted sixth overall. He was the best high school talent athletically in his class. The tools and the twitch made him the number one prospect at his position at one point in time. And he is finally, with this staff, unlocking some of the potential, becoming what he was always supposed to be. And it's why the Nats were able to take this series. It's why they're 6-3 since the break. It's why they have started to force the hand of this front office to maybe view them through a different lens, which brings us briefly to the early Meade trade. And we'll get into this in more detail coming up in a little bit because I want to bounce around all the things going on in DC sports in this first segment. But I do want to say really quickly that to go an inch deep and a mile wide, the great offensive team traded a bat. The bad pitching team got a bat, got an arm rather. That's very normal. That's probably what should happen. Curtis Meade is an excellent talent, and it looks like this is who he's going to be. 4 years of control. It's rare that you would trade a guy like that. In fact, we had people calling in last week suggesting trade him at peak value. And I basically shot that down over and over again because the deals that we were talking about were for shorter-term answers or bullpen help or something like that. I didn't think there was any way in the world you could get 5 years of control of a middle rotation starter for Curtis Meade. The value to me seems a little bit out of whack. I'm somewhat surprised that Boston would do this, but I understand why. The lefty Connelly Early, who we're hopefully going to have on the show today, is currently on the injured list with inflammation. There's always inherently more risk with arms than bats. I think Meade profiles beautifully at Fenway Park as a pull hitter in the air. He's going to play Pepper with the monster, right? But they also are desperate for an infield bat. And so you get him, you have 4 years of control. If this is who he is, you know, an 800s OPS guy that can hit the baseball off the wall a bunch, really good thing. They have more starting pitching at the big league level right now than their spots in the rotation. And some of their top prospects in the minor leagues, I just saw Anthony Ianson at the Futures game, are going to be there pretty quickly. They're the opposite of Washington. They need bats. They have plenty of arms. So they're willing to give up a lefty that I think is probably like a fourth starter, but could end up being a mid-rotation starter. And Tobes, this is exactly what Paul Toboni should be doing. It's a benefit that he knows Early really well, drafted him, developed him, one of his main guys in that system. But if you can flip a hitter, especially one that as of 6 months ago meant zero to you because he wasn't even here yet, and you're able to get a rotational piece back that you're going to control for 5 years beyond this, I think you have to do that. No questions asked.
Yeah, I mean, and they have a guy immediately fill in and gets two doubles in Brady House. Like, it's one thing if you trade away Curtis Meade and you're like, I don't know who fills the spot. Oh, you mean they're starting third baseman on opening day? Brady House, the guy that just immediately steps right in?
Who's been hitting .300 at AAA.
Yes, so he's going to step right in, and is he going to give you Curtis Meade production? I don't know that he will necessarily. He should be an upgrade defensively, hopefully. But we'll see what he's able to do now coming back to the big leagues. But this is something where this team, Boston, they both had a surplus at their various positions. They swap, and one of the things that we love to do in the industry is, oh, who was going to win the trade? Let's give grades out, all the things that you see. Wouldn't shock me at all if by the end of these guys' contracts, Grant, we're looking at this in 5 years, and you both shake your hands and go, good trade for both sides. Really happy how it worked out. Curtis Meade's leaving dents all over the monster because he's having doubles and hard singles all over the place and turns into a really good player, and this is more of who he is. And Connelly Early is a staple in your rotation. That's a win-win trade. It's totally fine.
I think the only way this ends up looking bad for the Nationals is if Connelly Early's injury gets worse before he pitches. He is currently expected to make a rehab start on August 3rd. The Nats believe that he'll be pitching in the big league soon thereafter. Let's call it early to mid-August, that he'll be helping them this year. Even though this deal is very little about 2026, and I think much more about 27 through 31. But if for some reason he either re-aggravates something or this gets worse or he needs some very lengthy recovery and a procedure done, and Curtis Meade just in that time has two really good years offensively, obviously it'll look bad. But even still, if you bake in a lengthy rehab and you get 3 years of control from a mid-rotation starter, it even still wouldn't be a bad return. I happen to think he's more of a four than like a two. I don't. That might make me a little lower on him, but I really do genuinely like the arm. I like the player. I've liked him in Boston. I just think he's off to such a great start in his career, like a Jake Bennett or something, that he's kind of viewed through a more positive, like optimistic lens. Here, he's got immediately your number two starter in a world where Foster Griffin gets traded. He's your number three right now. You go into a playoff series, a wild card series, if you're lined up with Griffin game one, Cavalli game two, Connor Lirley, who pitched in the playoffs for his fifth career start last year at Yankee Stadium. That's not a bad little 1-2-3. In a perfect world, if I'm a championship World Series team like the Dodgers, he's deeper down in my rotation.
Yes.
But this is the type of arm they don't have.
Exactly.
And in terms of sheer upside, Cavalli's the only guy in the organization that's healthy right now that's got a better chance to impact you positively over the next 2 years than Connelly Earle.
Yeah, when you look at the 2027 starting opening day starting rotation, Cade Cavalli's at the top, and then it's a bunch of, well, maybes, and now at least you have Connelly Earle. So you at least have 40% of your rotation taken care of, regardless of whether Early's a three, a four, maybe pitches incredibly well, looks like a two, whatever it is.
Yeah.
He's your second best starter on opening day next year, assuming they don't get something done with Foster Griffin. So you feel a lot better about that, and you try to figure out the rest of it. And that's where the Sakuras, the Susanas, they fit in eventually down the line as well. But you solidify that rotation a little bit.
Nobody's got you better covered on the Nats than we will this week. We're bringing Bustin' Loose Baseball, the pod that we do together, to life on Grant and Danny as they play a massive game against the Blue Jays.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
One person that's never rude, longtime friend of the program, Mr. Mark Zuckerman. Mark, what's up, man? You've been busy.
Yeah, but you know what? It's nice to be busy this time of year, guys. And busy not because I'm just writing about guys being traded away, but actually some interest in bringing guys in and trying to win this year. It's been a while since we've been in that position.
Yeah, man. It's very cool. Everybody should check out Mark's work covering the Washington Nationals, natsjournal.com, and the Nats Chat podcast. You can give him a follow at Mark Zuckerman. Let's start with the trade. Meade for Early. What do we make of this? Big picture and just in an envelope?
Well, I mean, that's not, first of all, it's just not the kind of trade you see very often. Big leaguer for big leaguer, both of them with, you know, 4+ years of control before they can be a free agent. And so you just don't see that kind of thing in season under normal circumstances. And when I first saw that the other night, when it broke late Saturday night, my thought was, wow, I would not have thought that Curtis Meade could get you a guy like Connelly Earle. Mm-hmm. And I get that Meade has been fantastic for the Nationals, a huge part of their offense this year. And as I said, a guy who's got 4 more years of control. He wasn't going to be going anywhere for a while. But Connelly Earle is a 24-year-old left-hander who's got 5 years of control, who's already got a track record of success in the big leagues, who has already started a winner-take-all playoff game at Yankee Stadium last October. For a team that we know needs pitching, and not just in the short term, but in the long term, it's hard to dispute that move to pick him up, because what this is a guy who, yes, it's about the long term and trying to make sure you have a team that can be successful for years, but it's also a guy who can help you now. And so it's one of these, like, both buy and sell at the same time. And I really respect Paul Toboni for taking that kind of approach. This is not, we're trading away our best players because we're looking 3 years down the road. This is, yeah, we're protecting ourselves 3 years down the road, but we're also trying to win right now, and this guy can help us do that.
What would you anticipate the next move being?
Well, I mean, they're going to pick up a couple of relievers. I really do believe that. If Toboni is, if we're taking him at his word, and what he said yesterday was that essentially this team has earned the right to try to win this year, that it would be foolish to try to break that up. He said they have an it factor. Okay, that sounds to me like a guy who understands they're not going anywhere, and what's their number one need? It's a bullpen. We've known that all year long.
Sure.
Now, are they going to be huge moves? Maybe not, but I could see them trading away lesser prospects for some relievers, maybe rental relievers. It'd be great if you get somebody who'd be here beyond this year to try to patch that up. I think where it really gets interesting is, you know, we're 1 week away now from the trade deadline on Monday. How they play this week, so against the Blue Jays the next 3 days, and then against the Braves over the weekend, I think goes a long way towards determining what else they might do. And the big name there to me is Foster Griffin. If you have a good week and you're right in the thick of this race and you're not being offered something that just blows you away for him, I think he stays because he's a part of trying to help you win this year, even though he is a free agent at the end of the year. Mm. If, though, you have a bad week and you fall back out of the race a little bit, maybe you're under 500 at the end of the week, I think you do have to listen to serious offers for him. You don't just trade him for anything, but if you get anything decent, I do think you have to do that. So I really think this week plays a big role in how they're going to approach this.
Any chance Foster Griffin get an extension from this team?
It's hard to see it happening now at this week. I understand why it's easy for fans to say, hey, lock the guy up. Like, why wouldn't you want him? Of course, everybody would want that. But it's hard to do because how do you value exactly what he is? As a 30-year-old who came back from Japan, doesn't have a track record, this is the one time in his career he's going to have a chance to be a free agent. If you're him and you're his agent, are you just saying, yeah, I'll sign for whatever you guys want to offer me? Or are you saying, I'm having the year of my life. Wait until the winter and I can negotiate with 30 other teams and actually choose where I go and how much I make? It doesn't mean he couldn't come back to the Nats at the end of all that. But I can understand it's not as easy as it sounds to say, oh, just throw him some money and he'll agree to that right now. We'll see. I'm not going to say never, but I can understand why it would complicate matters to try to make that happen next week.
Zuck, with Griffin specifically, like the extension, I get what you're saying, that this is his big chance to pop a very large contract. Was there any, like, I wonder if they had gone to Griffin 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago to talk about one, if it would have been a different situation before he's named to the All-Star team and all these things. Was there any discussion, you think, around that?
Well, I know a lot of us were wondering at the time, and kind of, I raised the topic with Foster around maybe 2 months ago, and he just kind of shrugged it off. And it's like, well, you know, that's not my department. My agent handles that, blah, 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 blah.
Gotcha.
I have no idea if the Nats did approach him at that time, and if they did, how serious they would have been about it. The irony of all this is he's maybe pitched too well to then be able to get an in-season extension, you know, like a reasonable one. Like if he just had a 3.50 ERA and wasn't an All-Star, maybe there'd actually be a better chance because he might not think he could get as much as a free agent. So that's the weird part of it, is that he's pitched so well that it's maybe created that kind of scenario. On top of all that, I mean, it's complicated to begin with, but then you have like this looming lockout this winter. And this is where I do think it might be interesting because, okay, if baseball's locked out on December 1st, if you're Foster Griffin, are you going to sign a deal before then? And if not, are you willing to wait that all out? And who knows what happens come March, April, May, who knows? And are you going to get lost in shuffle? And are you still going to get the kind of deal that you think you're going to get right now? So if I'm the Nats, I'd be maybe trying to make that case to him. But again, money talks. And if you're him and any player in this situation, and you have a chance to cash in free agency, it's hard to pass that up. You're betting on yourself, and most of the time it's going to work out for you.
It's very, very interesting times with the Nats right now. We're talking with our friend Mark Zuckerman here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Check out his work at natsjournal.com. I read your article, whenever that was, Saturday night or Sunday morning after the trade went down. Where is Early's health, and like when will he be pitching for Washington?
Well, yeah, that was kind of the number one question in the immediacy. He's like, well, hang on a second. He's on the IL with an elbow injury. And ironically, he'd suffered it facing the Nats about a month ago at Fenway Park. And at the time, I remember hearing, this was the night of the brawl with Cade Cavalli.
Yeah.
So it got lost in the shuffle. But I remember hearing from the Boston writers at the time that they were concerned it was something serious. Now, in the interim, it sounds like everything is checked out. There was no structural issues with his ligament or anything. He's been throwing. And according to Paul Toboni, he's making a rehab start on August 3rd. That was going to happen even if he wasn't traded. And so by Toboni's logic, give him a couple of those starts, and within a few weeks, he could be pitching for them. Now, there are still steps that have to be taken, and God knows we've seen over the years here, guys who looked like they were on the verge of coming back from injury, and something went wrong, and it didn't happen. So I don't want to say it's 100% guaranteed. But I think they made this trade with the belief that they're going to get 7 to 10 starts out of Early the rest of this season, in addition to then having the 5 years of control of him beyond that. And I think that's one of the reasons they made the deal. Knowing Paul Toboni, how well he knows the Red Sox, I mean, he drafted Early. He was our scouting director. I have a hard time believing he would make that deal if he wasn't really sure that this is not a long-term issue. But he's still got to go out there and pitch and show that he's okay.
Sure. So now I think the questions become, what happens next? We've heard Foster Griffin a lot, Luis Garcia maybe. There was a time where we were talking about C.J. Abrams. I think he's just playing so well that'd be impossible. Kind of what do you think happens next?
Well, like I said to B-Mitch, I mean, I think the bullpen has obviously been their number one concern, and I think you can address that without giving up top prospects. It's not that hard to get rental relievers this time of year. They're not going to be part of the long-term solution, and I don't know if they're going to go get like a bona fide closer, but you can get guys who will help you at least patch that up, that group. Garcia, if you had told me the other night that they had traded Garcia for Connolly Early, I would have thought, oh, that makes sense. I could see that. The fact that they got him for Meade makes me wonder, what would you get for Garcia, who only has one more year after this before he's a free agent, obviously having a career year. And I understand that from the Nats standpoint, you could afford to lose Meade's bat. They still scored 10 runs yesterday. You had Brady House ready to come up and replace him. Yeah. Can you afford to also lose Luis Garcia's bat if you are really trying to go for it this year? That feels a little tougher. But I think with all these things, and I even put C.J. Abrams in this category, even though I think it's unlikely, Toboni's going to listen. And if somebody offered him something that was like, hey, I can't pass that up, like Connolly Early for Curtis Meade, then I think he'll make the move. Do I think that you're going to get that for Garcia? Do I think anybody's going to match just the astronomical price at this point for C.J. Abrams? Probably not. But he'd be doing a disservice if he didn't at least listen to what's being offered and consider that, because ultimately this is about trying to build a team that's going to be successful beyond this year, that can win in 27, 28, and beyond.
For sure.
You think C.J. can help that, though? Better than somebody else? I think C.J. will probably help that much better than somebody else coming in, right?
Well, of course. But I mean, you got to set that bar crazy high right now for him, given what he's doing.
Yeah.
I don't think CJ goes anywhere. I'm fascinated to see what happens with Griffin and with Garcia. And it's crazy that there's still one more week left for them. Like, I think the way they swing the bat, it's not going to happen. But like, if they went 0-6 this week, you probably are selling. You know what I mean? Because then you fall out. But the way they just keep grinding out winning series, I'm curious, Mark, for you, being in that clubhouse yesterday after the win over the Diamondbacks, but also after the trade, what was the vibe like?
Yeah, it wasn't that different than it's been. And again, like they all said, hey, we love Curtis, and they're sorry to see him go. But I think when you see what you got in return, and that it wasn't like they traded him for three prospects and guys who were, 19 years old and still at single A. They got a guy who's going to ideally be with them in a couple of weeks, helping them in a playoff push. I think they understand that and can view that as, we are going for it here. I think the thing that would really demoralize that group, if they did trade Griffin and it wasn't for somebody who was like big league ready right now, something like that, or obviously if they traded C.J. Abrams, that would be different, because now they're thinking, what was the point of all this? We're making a run at this, and they don't believe in us right now. They're just thinking about the future. That move yesterday, I think, while it probably shocked a lot of people, when you really think about it, you'd say, hey, this is actually a sign that the president of baseball operations is trying to win right now, and he believes in us.
Yeah. So let's pull that thread for a second, Mark. If Tomone's trying to compete right now, and let's say they're able to add a couple bullpen arms, what do you think this team could be?
Yeah.
It's a great question, JP, because I think all along there's been this feeling of like, okay, look, I know the lineup is fantastic, but if you put them in a playoff series right now against the Dodgers or the Brewers or the Braves or the Phillies, like what chance would they really have? Even with a better bullpen, are you trusting this rotation? Are you trusting that lineup is going to do that against, you know, playoff caliber pitching? Maybe, you know, but I think there's still a realistic notion here that, hey, it's fine to go for it and see if you can make it in to the playoffs, but is this team built to win once you get to October? No, not really, unless they just have some kind of magic run in them, and that's why you don't give up on it. But that's why I think anything they do is really going to be done not to sacrifice their chances in 27 and beyond. And I think the important thing to keep in mind is here, yes, you go for it if you have the shot, and you try to get in, and what a great story that would be, and you never know what could happen. But what this season has done to this point is, I think, confirmed or reiterated to the front office and everybody that they should be going for it in 2027. And if you can add the right pieces on top of what they have, especially on the pitching side, you've got a real team that can contend in a year, not just 2-3 years down the road like we all thought originally.
I know the expectations weren't very high, and they've been playing offensively, they've been outstanding. What grade? I always ask you about the grade. What grade you give them up to this point?
I mean, if we're grading on a curve and saying, what did you expect? Then it's like an A-, I guess. You know, like I don't know that anybody could have thought they'd be in this position. Now, you have to separate the offense from the pitching side, of course. The offense is an A+. The pitching is a C, maybe.
might be lower than that.
Yeah, it might be, yeah. So that's been the great, like mystery of all this is they knew that the lineup had the potential to be good. I don't think anybody honestly expected they were going to be the best offense in baseball.
No.
But I also think they didn't necessarily think they were going to have the worst pitching staff in baseball either. They thought they wouldn't think they'd be good. But they thought they'd be a little bit better. And it does at least give you a blueprint moving forward to say, they've done a great job this year. They've exceeded expectations. Yes. Let's stick with it. Don't blow this thing up. But I think hopefully, and hopefully it's a relatively normal winter given the lockout, that they should be looking at that as, hey, we can make some calculated moves to now improve this team on a pitching standpoint and actually be ready to try to win for real next year.
It's so interesting because you're completely right. I think expectations for this Nats team versus where we are now in late July are wildly different. And it's been so much fun as a Nats fan, as somebody that talks about sports for a living, just to have them good and to be at this point where the trade deadline is a huge decision for the organization as far as what they're going to do. How much, and maybe Tomone won't talk about it publicly, but like how much is the looming labor strife a factor in what they're doing? Or do they think maybe they'll come out on the better side of this if there actually is a cap or a more significant luxury tax or whatever might end up happening?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it probably is something that ownership has to confront more than the front office, but I do think you have to at least keep in the back of your mind. And here's the real dilemma, and I don't know that it's going to come to this. Is there really going to be a salary cap and floor next year? Without there being like a ton of games lost, like would the union agree to that before having to lose 162 games? I don't know. But let's say there is. Well, this team is nowhere close to what a salary floor would be in 2027. They're going to be required to spend money. If it comes to that, they're going to be required to spend some real money prior to next season to reach that floor because they just don't have anybody yet that's that in that category. You know, Kaybert Ruiz is the only one who signed long term. So if you're Paul Tomone, maybe that's a nice position to be in, but you also don't want to now just spend money for the sake of it. So it does create an interesting dilemma. I, personally, I don't think we're going to have a cap and floor in 2027. I think there's too many obstacles to make that happen. I think they're going to have to find some kind of middle ground between the two sides to make it happen. If not, and I hope it's not the case, but they would be losing, I think, months of baseball. If the owners absolutely insist on it happening and the players don't agree to that, we're going to miss a good number of games next year. And I really hope it does not come to that.
God, I remember as a kid, all the interest in baseball, everybody was so into it, and then they lost, and then they went on strike.
And they don't need that right now.
Dude, baseball's got so much momentum.
This will destroy
them. Keep playing the games. Last thing's up, because I wanted to ask you this when I saw you the last time I was over there. Toboni has said it. There is anecdotal evidence to support it. I would look at Meade, Garcia, even Jacob Young to a lesser degree. Do you buy that these guys can coach hitting, that they can develop power where it hasn't been on display before?
Well, yeah. I mean, the evidence so far would suggest that, yes, you can. Now, that doesn't mean you can just turn anybody into a great hitter, but they do seem to be pretty good at identifying a guy's strengths, helping them maximize that. They're certainly really adept at playing matchups and putting their hitters into advantageous situations against who they're facing, lefty, righty, and what style of pitcher and all that. I think there's absolutely something said for that. And maybe deep down, part of the reason you're willing to trade a Curtis Meade is that you're thinking, well, we can go develop the next Curtis Meade, whoever that might be. Mm-hmm. Now, the flip side of this is, if they're so good at that, why aren't they doing the same thing on the pitching side?
Right.
So it does ultimately come down to talent above all else. And, you know, you can't just turn anybody into a great player. They have to come here with at least some ability to begin with. But I don't want to shortchange what this coaching staff and what the front office has done in helping players become the best versions of themselves, at least on the offensive side.
Yeah.
We've certainly seen that.
Absolutely. Zuck, thank you for the time, man. We'll be watching. We appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Take care.
All right, man. All right.
So, buddy, Mark Zuckerman.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're the Nats right now, do you buy? Do you sell? Do you attempt to do both at the same time? Is Paul Toboni's brain in a blender right now, heading to the trade deadline August 3rd?
I read somewhere where some people think that the league is going to possibly interpret this as the Nats being sellers. That by unloading Meade, you know, who they had just picked up, and they're getting a good value for that. The perception around the league could be that the Nats
are
sellers.
I think you could perceive that if they dealt Meade and you felt like they got taken advantage of or didn't improve themselves in the deal.
Or if you got prospects.
That doesn't seem to be the case.
If you got two prospects for them that are currently in the minors,
right?
I would have said that.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They got a starting pitcher who, when healthy, will be a starting pitcher here.
Right.
Right away.
Yeah, he'll be part of the rotation. He's 24 years old. He comes in with an elbow injury, which makes you raise your eyebrow a little
bit.
Okay,
but they talked to the doctors.
Minor.
They,
yeah.
They did the homework on that.
Toboni knows him from being
Toboni
in Boston.
Knows, exactly.
So
he knows all the Boston guys. I'm sure he talked to the doctor.
And I liked what Curtis Meade brought to the team, but if you can get a young starter in return for a guy that wasn't even on the roster, you know, like last season, like picked up right at the beginning of the season, it seems like a worthwhile deal.
I mean,
they
got plenty of bats.
Yeah.
They need help on the mound.
I know, but what if they...
And it's not just early. They need other guys.
Yeah. I know, but what if they get rid of Griffin because they are far apart in the talks?
Okay.
You know, fizzled quickly. That was the quote. Yep. Fizzled quickly.
I was told that they offered him 2 years, $22 million. He turned it down.
Yeah. So...
So $11 million per didn't get it done.
Yeah.
He's making about $5 million this year.
So I'm guessing he wanted
I'm sure that his
50.
I'm sure his agent knows that he can get more on the open market. Like
probably,
of course,
the year he's having
that down.
Assuming. So let's just assume, because I'm going to assume he gone. And it's disappointing. But if the talks fizzled quickly, I don't see How often do talks fizzle quickly turn into a deal three days later?
If I were Toboni in the Nats, I'm squeezing one more start out of him. He started on Saturday.
Yeah.
I'm going to get one more start out of him before he gets dealt.
But then they deal him, and then assume they get a decent haul.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But they're not going to get a ton because he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year.
Right.
Right? But they should get something decent.
But a contender that would be desperate
to add him.
What if they do what Paulson was suggesting? GP was suggesting they move Garcia because his value is at a peak. Then you really have to say they were sellers.
Oh, you mean if they did that?
If they lose Garcia and Foster? Yes.
Oh, of course.
Especially if they're
getting prospects.
Yeah. All right. Let's
but go, at least for me, they got a guy who's going to play right away when he's healthy.
Yeah. Let's go to Jeff in Richmond. 800-636-1067 if you want to chime in. Do you like the move? And what do you see happening next? Jeff, what's up?
Well, fellas, y'all have quite the eclectic show. You talk about sardines one segment and Jeremiah Love the next. Listen, let me tell you what's
that's
important.
That's right.
The most important statistic in offensive baseball is runs produced. It's not home runs, batting average, or OPS. And James Wood and Abrams are leading the major leagues in runs produced. Wood has produced 138 runs. Abrams has produced 120-21, and that's, you know, runs scored plus RBIs, less home runs.
Right.
They're the two best offensive players in baseball on one team. No other two players are really close. Alvarez, for instance, of Houston, he's produced 115 runs.
Yep.
Wood has produced 138.
Mm-hmm.
It's runs produced that counts. Do you know who the all-time leader in baseball in runs? He's the only player to ever go over 4,000 for a career. Ty Cobb produced 4,000.
I was going to say Babe, but okay.
Yeah, but see, Cobb didn't hit a lot of home runs.
That's true.
Cobb not only scored the second most runs of all time next to Henderson, Cobb drove in almost 2,000 in his career. So, but Cobb produced over 4,000 runs.
What was it like watching Ty Cobb play baseball?
He's not that old, Cakes. Come on.
Well,
come on.
I'm
all right. So, what's your point? What's your point about James and CJ? Yes, they're MVP candidates in the National League, 100%.
Yeah, exactly. And I would hate to see them trade Abrams. I don't get that. But here again, that goes into contracts and blah, blah, this, that, and the other. But it's just great when you have the two best offensive players on your team. I don't think you should be selling anything. You ought to be trying to make the playoffs.
That's what I said. That's what I would love to see.
Yep.
I would love to add a couple more pieces in the bullpen, but I'm not sure they're going to. Yeah. I hope I'm wrong.
These two guys are heading towards a season. There was I guess it was the 27 season with the Yankees when Ruth and Gehrig put up incredible numbers. They both drove in a bunch.
Hold on, but Jeff, you didn't answer a question.
Jeff Burns.
Did you like the move?
Did you like trading me?
Yeah, I have nothing against Curtis Mead. I mean, he's been a good player.
All right, what do you think they'll do next? Are you going to be upset when they trade Foster Griffin in like 4 days?
Well, I may be upset, but I guess it's in the cards. It's going to happen.
Right.
You hate to see them lose their best pitcher.
Yep. Right.
Yep.
It's just things are so crazy these days. I mean, I'm a little older than you guys, and I remember back in the days when things weren't as nuts.
Jeff, thank you. You're actually a lot older than us. You're 78.
He's nice. He tolerates the show.
He's very nice.
He's obviously very geeky into baseball.
I mean, a little older than us is like 60. Okay, he's almost 80. I have to defend us here.
All right, let's go to James in Centerville. James, what's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. Congratulations on your 30th.
Thanks, man.
And I'm 69, not quite as old as that guy.
And we're turning old today.
Yeah. What's up, James?
I've been listening to you guys the whole time.
Appreciate it.
That you guys been on the air. Okay. Now, I would never trade Abrams. He's the leader of the team. I love the Mead trade.
Yeah.
Foster Griffin, when he pitches, we're 17-4.
I know.
So that means we're 37-48 when he doesn't.
Yeah.
Why would we trade a guy like that?
They want to get something in return. Because they're going to lose.
Because they're probably, yeah, they're going to lose them next year and they want something.
Something in return.
I don't understand.
They could just offer them a little bit more money.
Yeah.
And keep them.
Yeah.
$11 million, what kind of offer is that? That's crazy.
Well,
I mean, it's more than double what he's making this year. It's actually pretty, I mean, seemingly a good offer, but he can make more in the open market.
I know. No one would take that deal, though.
What do you think would get it done? You think $20 million a year would get it done?
I don't know. It's a great question.
Maybe 15, at least 15 for 3 years.
If it was only $4 million apart per year, I don't think it would be fizzled quickly. I think you would be in a ballpark.
Maybe 3 years, 45 mil.
I don't think that'll get it done.
He'd be crazy to turn it down.
Hey, Bish.
Yeah.
I know you're a Boston fan. The Nationals traded Bennett to the Red Sox, in December, and he's like one of your top pitchers now.
Yeah, I know. It's and they
thank you, James.
And they needed to get a bat, because two of their best hitters are still injured, and I don't even know when they're going to come back. So they were kind of desperate. When you're going to trade away one of your young stud pitchers who has an ERA of around 3, you're all in this year.
All right, let's go. Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
Seemingly, yeah.
Let's go to Don in Ashburn. Don, what's up? You're all with the Junkies. What do you think, Don?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, boys. Yeah, I think the early lead trade was good. As far as Griffin, though, I mean, you know, he's 31 and he had Tommy John, and the last guy that was 31 and had Tommy John, we gave a boatload of money to, and I think the learners are still suffering from some PTSD from that, and they're not going to get him the money, so I think you have to deal him and see what you can get. If not, you hold on to him, see where you're going to go. But this team's not built to make a long, deep run in the play. We're talking wild card.
Right.
So I think you get what you can get for Griffin, and hopefully they can get a big haul for it.
Yeah. All right. I don't think
you're not
going to
get a big haul for
a big haul.
A 30-year-old whose contract is expiring. You're not going
to
get.
Foster Griffin is scheduled to pitch Thursday, July 30th.
Against Atlanta.
At Atlanta.
Yeah.
That'll probably
going to be his last appearance in a Nats uniform.
Yeah.
And he's been awesome. He's been unbelievable.
If they offered him roughly $11 million per for 2 years, and it talks fizzled quickly.
They gave him the Dikembe. They said, no, that's not going to get it done.
We were thinking more like, I don't know,
we're thinking
three
about
for 60.
17 or $18 million a year, somewhere in that neighborhood. Maybe 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's putting up those type of numbers.
He can probably get that sort of deal on the open market.
All right, let's go to Mikey in Ashburn, 800-636-1067. If you want to chime in, what'd you think of the deal, and what do you think's next? Mikey!
Hey, fellas, how you doing?
Hey, Mikey. Doing great.
What's up, Mike?
I think they got great value out of Meade. I've been hearing you guys talk about the potential, or I guess lack thereof, of an Abrams trade, and I don't know that I'm as committed to the same position as you guys. I'd raise 2 points. One, I think he's an atrocious fielder. I think off the top of my head, he's like 21st in fielding percentage.
Yeah, yeah.
And shortstop's probably, what, the second most valuable defensive position on the entire field after catcher.
Definitely an issue.
But
the bat is so good.
He might make up for it with the bat. It is so good. The other thing I would say is, and maybe this is, there's nothing here, but if I'm going into negotiations after 2 years of arbitration and it's still the same front office, I know they got a new coaching staff and they got rid of Rizzo, but I believe it was a year or two ago that he got called at the casino at 2 a.m. and they didn't just bench him, they demoted him, which to me is a pretty blatant attempt at public embarrassment. If I'm going into contract negotiations after a move like that, and granted, I'm a pretty petty person, but I'd give him a hard time. I'd hire Scott Boras and get as much out of him as I could.
Well, so far he hadn't done that.
In my opinion, I don't think his stock's ever going to be higher. And like I said, I think the league right now just values bats more than they do defense. So I would think about unloading him if you could really get two top prospects for him, which I kind of wish they still had Rizzo, because that dude was a great trader. But obviously he's gone now. So I don't know.
Sabonis is doing pretty good so far. But we love Rizzo. We love Rizzo.
You make good points. I mean, if you know you're not going to sign Abrams to a huge deal after 2028.
Well, plus you know you got Eli.
And you got Eli.
Wings,
true.
Like balling. Now he's not going to be ready next year, it doesn't look like. But
I just am excited about this year. I'm not looking for next year or 2028 or 2029 or 2030. I'm looking at this year, and if they added a few more pieces, they got a legit chance of getting into the playoffs. That's what I want to see.
And as far as CJ getting demoted after the gambling issue, maybe that was a great wake-up call for him.
Well, I think that's why they did it.
Like, yeah, I mean, like you can't just let that slide if you're Rizzo and the front office. No. And maybe it was just like a growing up type maturing moment for him. I mean, I'm sure he didn't think like that while it was happening, but maybe, you know, as he views it in the rear view at this point, it was potentially a learning spot for him.
Yeah.
And an improvement spot. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have no idea how he feels about that, and if he's still pissed off at the owners, but he knows he's going to make a ton of money.
Yes.
When he's
well aware of
after
that.
He's a free agent, right? In 2029, he's going to make a ton of money. I just don't want to see it go this way so soon. I want him to be here throughout the rest of the year and have a chance of getting to the playoffs. If they don't, and you want to trade him in the offseason, okay, I'm okay with that. If you probably aren't going to be able to sign him to a long-term deal. I just know that from the people I talk to, if you trade him before the deadline, that's the locker room's going to be pissed.
By the way, what is it if he stays past the deadline? What is his arbitration number going to be for 2027?
Oh, it's probably going to be pretty
gonna
big.
He's going to get a big fat raise, even if he stays here with the Nats.
What's he making on
this
year?
Year deal? He's
$5 million,
$4.2 million deal.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be crazy.
It would probably be like $15 million
or something.
I was going to say it'd probably be double or triple.
Probably 10 or 11 at least.
Yeah.
Maybe higher.
That's nothing.
That's
for his production.
For 1 year, that's a steal.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, they do that in a heartbeat if they could. I don't know. I still think that this year's kind of like gravy to them, and they're looking at it differently than we are as fans. We're grabbing onto it and want to get a stranglehold on it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They're still looking at it as kind of like gravy. And they're not going to do anything to potentially jeopardize their longer-term plan.
Why is that? I mean, plans change all the time.
I mean, plans have changed. I think
they have to be fluid.
He acknowledged. I asked him that.
Yeah.
Has this accelerated the timeline? And he said, yeah, you know, you have to say it has to an extent. But they're not just going to throw the kitchen sink at it just to get this wild card spot. It's got to be the right move that also makes long-term sense.
Well, that's why I think they dealt Mead. The move made sense.
It does make sense, especially with House there. Yeah.
I don't agree with that, though.
Yeah. Well, I think I might agree with it.
So fans aren't allowed to have expectations anymore because it was deemed a rebuild before the season started?
No, you could have expectations, but I'm just saying, and they will do something. I think they'll do something on the margins, but they're not going to go all in for this year. They're just not. They're not going to go
all
in. I don't
know what is going all in.
I don't know.
They don't have to trade for Scooble. You can just trade for a couple of middle relievers.
They'll do that, but they're not going to give up prospects. They might have to give up some guy on the roster now that's contributing. You know, it's going to be like a plus-minus.
I could see them getting rid of Garcia. I could see that.
That's a lot of production.
That's a lot of production.
That would be disappointing.
It would be 100%.
I'm going to be disappointed when they give up Griffin. But I understand it. Would you trade Griffin if you're
DeBoney?
Yeah.
No.
They're going to do it.
I'm sorry. Just because you were expected to win 50 games at the start of the season, and now you're over.
Now you got 54.
Yeah, now you have 54. I mean, it's just because you thought you were going to suck when the season started doesn't mean you need to.
No, it's not just because of that. It's just that they know they're going to lose him and they want to get something back. I guess they could get a compensatory pick, which I think would be.
Or you could keep him
and win games.
Give him what he wants.
I don't know that that's going to be possible when guys can't hit the open market.
I don't know. There's a certain number where a guy can't turn it down.
Or just keep him and win this season.
Paul Toboni's got a lot on his plate leading up to August 3rd. Curtis Mead has already been dealt. Is Foster Griffin going to be next? It should be an interesting next week for the Washington Nationals.
All right, so let's real quick get into the trade the Nats made over the weekend. It was late night on Saturday evening. Some people were probably sleeping if you're early to bed. 11 plus p.m., close to midnight, Paul Toboni and his former organization Craig Breslow and the Red Sox pull off a swap, big leaguer for big leaguer, which you're going to see some of this. There's not enough true sellers on the market right now for teams to give up big leaguers for prospects. And I think because the markets are pretty bare with starting pitching, you're going to see some major leaguer for major leaguer reshuffling, where the team that has plenty of offense but not any pitching, like Washington, adds the pitcher, and the team that has ample pitching but not enough offense adds the bat. And so Curtis Meade, who's having a career year and has broken out as a really good player with an 852 OPS and fourth on the Nationals with 17 home runs, goes to Boston for Connelly Early. The quick breakdown on Early is he's a UVA product who at 24 years old now, just turned 24, about 6'3 and 200 pounds, former fifth-round pick, great success story, both in the draft by Toboni when he was in Boston, and then developmentally where they added velocity and stuff to his mix. I mean, they did a really good job building him up. He made four starts last year as a rookie and shined with an ERA barely over two, and then he pitched in the playoffs at Yankee Stadium and blew everybody away. This year in 17 starts, he's been a little bit more pedestrian, but it's a 3-4 ERA and more than a strikeout per inning. You'll work with that. And as I said, I think he's mostly a mid-rotation type starter, but it's a six-pitch mix. He's got some Foster Griffin to him, 35% four-seamer, 20% two-seamer, so it's a lot of fastballs, which actually grades out as his best pitch, even though he averages only 94 with his velocity. Then he throws changeup, curveball, slider, sweeper. But if Foster Griffin's in the rotation for the rest of this season, Griffin, Cavalli, Early into the postseason, if he were to get there, would be the top three. I mean, he very easily, I think, supplants a healthy Jake Irvin and then 37-year-old Miles Michaelis or the veteran Zach Littell, who's been up and down all year, as the number three guy in this rotation.
Yeah, I mean, some of the peripherals maybe aren't as friendly to Connelly Early, but, you know, for his xERA this year, it's a 4.33, which, by the way, would be someone that you'd absolutely take on this starting staff. So, to me, we were going into this deadline thinking that they were going to potentially add some pitching. I didn't necessarily think they were going to add a controllable starter like this, and I think that's why Curtis Meade was the return, because I don't think they were necessarily looking for a controllable starter like this because you assumed it would cost more. But them to get a controllable third baseman or second baseman, I think they're going to use him out there in Boston. And then you have Connelly Early, someone come back to you that is going to pitch for this team for quite some time and someone that you feel like you can get a lot out of. Like, regardless of what the peripherals say, the results on the field have been 21 games, 111 innings, 3.24 ERA with 122 strikeouts. That's someone you can always find a spot for, whether it's as your fourth starter or in the Nationals case where they don't have a lot of pitching that's on the doorstep, especially in the starting rotation.
That's the key to me. That's
he steps right in.
So the rotation is pretty bleak. Guys like Andrew Alvarez have had opportunities now, and there's just not anyone that's ready or else they'd be tapping into those players. In terms of their prospects, Travis Acora's got a chance to be a really legitimate frontline starter. He hasn't pitched all year because he's coming back from TJ. Just started throwing again off a mound. Harleen Susana, we never really get updates on him. He just never pitches. But like, he's a good pitching prospect who has not pitched this season. So they don't, I mean, find the next guy. I think Luis Perales, who they acquired in the trade for Jake Bennett, who's in AAA and throws really hard, hasn't had a particularly good season, frankly. 78 innings, only 70 strikeouts, but does have a 199 average against, does some good things. He's got unbelievable stuff. He's coming off of a serious injury in his recent past. So he's not a guy you can just go out there right now and ask to go six innings at a time or whatever, even if he was pitching well. So they just don't have the arm. So getting Connelly Early to me was a no-brainer. But here, I think, is the question out of this trade. And I went over to Nats Park yesterday in the morning, made sure I was there just to get some content for the show and wanted to sit in on the Toboni and the Butera press conferences and get a feel for the organization. But what I want to know from fans is, what does this trade tell you about Toboni's thinking going into the deadline? They pulled the trigger on this way early, right? August 3rd is the deadline, and everything's not going to truly heat up in the way that we think of the traditional deadline until probably the last 72 hours or so. So if he's willing to part with Meade, who would have been on their do not trade list, they were not shopping him, but when they found out they could get Early back for Curtis Meade, they just felt like they couldn't say no to that. Does this tell you anything about his philosophy? That maybe they are going to go for it. Maybe they are aggressive. He did say yesterday after the trade in his press conference that he feels like the team has earned the right to get a reinforcement to try to push them forward here. But you got to give something up when you do that, major leaguer for major leaguer. But I'll make the case for why I don't think this actually is an indicator of buying or selling or what they're thinking, and that it could still go in either direction. But I'm just curious what people think about that.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.